Hello, Real People. Ashley Brewer here, your host for today's episode of Real Stories, Real People. Super excited to bring to you today my conversation with Paul Fortune. As an infant, Paul was diagnosed with cerebral palsy and actually told that he would likely never be able to walk. And I don't want to give away too much of his story. It's so inspiring and so incredible. And I hope that you'll enjoy my conversation with my friend, Paul Fortune. Here we go. Welcome to Real Stories, Real People, a personal journal, mental health, and self-improvement podcast where we're shattering stigma one story at a time. Our show covers a wide variety of topics related to mental health and life in general, so use your best judgment when listening to the show. We're not therapists, counselors, or mental health professionals, and we do not provide medical advice. We're simply real people committed to talking about the tough things in life so that others can find hope. So tune in and hang on, because here we go. Paul, I'm really excited to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us.
Ashley, I appreciate it. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
So we just met literally like 30 seconds ago, and I was doing some research on you, kind of preparing for the show. And in doing that, I went to your website, which is acalltoaction.coach. And I know very little of your story, but on your website, I saw what I believe is probably or has probably been a huge theme in your life. And that was a line that says, rewrite your story and take control of your life. But what I do know about your story is that your mother was told when you were an infant that you would never be able to walk. Now, I also know about your story that you've played varsity baseball. So you obviously know a lot about rewriting a story. So talk to me about when your mother was given that news and the diagnosis that she was given of cerebral palsy. For our listeners who don't know what is it? What's the prognosis? What were they told, or what was your mother told about you?
Yeah. So cerebral palsy, for your viewers that don't know, it happens at birth. It's lack of oxygen in the brain at labor. And as a result of that, can lead to one side of the body paralyzed. And this is permanent. This does not go away. This is for the rest of your life. So when I was born, I wasn't moving the right side of my body very much. And obviously my mom was concerned about that. So she took me to the doctors to get some testing done on why I wasn't moving the right side of my body very much. And after doing a lot of testing, the doctor came back that I suffered from cerebral palsy. And at the time, they thought the cerebral palsy was so severe that they thought I would never be able to walk. And it would be a good idea at some point in time to get me ready to be in a wheelchair, because that was going to be my life going forward.
Wow.
Well, thank goodness for a great mom. She just didn't get with that diagnosis. She got other opinions and found a physician that was willing to help. And as a result of this physician's help, I was able to walk at age 3, which I don't remember, but obviously that's a huge feat because the other doctors thought I was never going to be able to walk. And I was able to do that at 3. But I remember being put into soccer around 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
And at the time, I could only run about 25 to 50 yards. And obviously the other kids can run laps around the soccer field and actually play soccer.
Right.
And I remember being on the field, just standing there going, this is ridiculous. I can barely move and they're playing soccer and I'm just standing there. And I remember going to my mom and saying, I don't want to play soccer anymore. I'm making a fool out of myself.
Aww.
My mom telling me that if you don't want to play soccer anymore, that's okay, but you got to honor your commitment. So once you finish out the soccer season, if you don't want to play soccer anymore, that's fine, but we got to finish out the season. So that's exactly what happened. I'm 40 years old. I've never played soccer since. I finished out that soccer season. I've never played soccer in my life. But I got a big break when I was about 6 or 7. I got surgery on my right foot to give me a little bit more spring in my step, take away the pain when I felt when I ran. And I didn't test it out yet, but I switched schools around this time. And I remember my first day of PE, physical education. And I remember the teacher saying, after we're stretching, the teacher said, okay, run a lap. And I'm thinking to myself, here we go again. I'm going to run about 25 to 50 yards and I'm going to have to stop. And these other kids are going to see that. That's all I can do. And they're going to start teasing me again. But because my surgery was different, I was able to go past that point where I normally have to stop. And I remember saying to myself, come on, Paul, you got this, buddy. Keep going, keep going. And I finished the lap with the other kids. And I, on the outside, I kept it cool. But on the inside, I was like, yes, yes, yes.
Right.
The first time in my life where I fit in, that I didn't stand out. And things got easier for me because of the operation, but I wouldn't consider them easy. I switched schools again in junior high. And actually, as you know, that's just a tough age. Kids are going through changes and they already have their cliques. You know, they've already been going to school with each other for quite a long time.
Yeah.
So just being a new kid alone going into junior high is going to be tough to break in. Well, I was a new kid. Plus I had a disability because I still walk with a little bit of limp. I still held my right arm a little bit differently than the other kids. So I came in being bullied and teased pretty much every single day. And on top of this, my mom raised me Catholic. So she wanted me to go to a Catholic high school. Mm-hmm. So I had to take an assessment test to see where I was at academically so they could, where they could place me.
Right.
Well, I must have bombed the test because when I met with the principal and my mom, the principal says, we're going to put Paul at the lowest level possible. And I don't expect much from him. He does not seem like he's college material. After one test, the principal says that to us.
Aww.
So I have that news and I'm bullied and teased in school. I remember going to my room pretty much every night, crying myself to sleep, saying, why me? Why do I have to be different? Why can't I just fit in?
And so can you tell me a little bit, because that was one of the things I wanted you to dig into a little bit, knowing what little I know about your story, is just some of those difficult moments as a child or as an adult where you knew you were different and where people treated you like you were different, because I think bullying is obviously a huge problem. I know back in the day when I was in school, we didn't necessarily call it bullying. It was teasing. Now it's called bullying, but it's a really big problem. And so I think a lot of people can relate to that aspect of your story. Obviously it led you to tears and crying yourself to sleep, but what was it like? What did it feel like when people were treating you differently?
I felt alone. I felt like the kids were on one side and I was on another, and I really didn't have an outlet because I didn't know, there was kids that were, you know, friendly to me, but they didn't want to be too close to me because they didn't want to get bullied. So they stayed back. And so I was alone. I really didn't have any friends in junior high to grab onto. And, you know, and at the time, I really didn't want to tell anybody, and I didn't, the big thing, especially in junior high, is you don't want to be a snitch.
Right.
So I didn't want to go to anybody and tell them that this was going on. So I was pretty much suffering in silence, to be honest with you. I didn't have an outlet at the time. I was just kind of just living this life that of this pain and anger all the time.
Were you open with your diagnosis? Like, did you tell people you had cerebral palsy, or were you trying to do anything and everything that you could do to fit in?
I was not open about my cerebral palsy at the time. I would make up silly stories about why I was limping or whatnot, because I did not want to talk about having cerebral palsy. And even if I did talk about it, I'd probably be in tears. Because all I wanted to do was fit in. I did not want to stand out at all. So I didn't want anybody to know that I had cerebral palsy, because I didn't want anybody to take pity on me. I didn't want pity. I just wanted to be treated as just a normal other kid. So yeah, no, I buried that story. I did not want to tell anybody.
It's a weird thing when you're in like middle school, junior high, where you don't want to fly under the radar. You don't want to fly above the radar. There's like this perfect place where you want to be, where you're not overly recognized, but you're also not recognized. And so going into a time like that in your life with this, I just can't imagine what that was like, because I relate a lot to the bullying part of your story. And I didn't have something like cerebral palsy to overcome or anything like that. And yet, you know, kids can just be mean. And like you said, you don't want to be a snitch and tattletale on them. So thank you for kind of delving into that a little bit more, because that is something that I feel is very relatable in your story, is just the desire to fit in and the desire to not be alone. Yet when we feel like we don't fit in, we almost isolate ourselves.
Absolutely. I was isolating myself. That's what my life was. And I don't know what came over me, but around middle way through eighth grade, I was so sick of feeling angry and sad all the time, because those were my go-to emotions. That's where we're coming out all the time. But I knew deep down that wasn't my go-to emotions. That wasn't who I really was deep down, but they were just coming out because of the environment I was in. So I thought to myself, what could I do to change that? What could I do to distract me from those feelings? So I thought to myself, what if I set a goal for myself? So just focusing on the goal and not worry about that noise that I was facing or hearing. And at the time, I loved baseball. So I made a goal for myself to make my varsity baseball team in high school. So from then on, I was playing fall ball, winter ball, spring ball. And if I wasn't doing that, I was throwing a tennis ball against the wall. And the great thing about this, Ashley, and I know this now, I did not know this at the time when I was doing it, I was putting out a different energy to these kids.
Yeah.
I had my shoulders back, my head up. And as a result of this new energy, they were sending a different energy back towards me. In other words, instead of bullying and teasing me, they started rooting for me.
Right.
So my high school career was way different than my junior high career. And it was all because of this energy shift that I decided to put out. Totally different. And I'm happy to tell you, because of the hard work I put in, I was able to make my varsity baseball team as a junior and as a senior.
So what was that like for you? Because you explain, even when you go to PE and they're like, we're going to run a lap, you did it successfully. And like in your head, you're freaking out, you're pumped, but you do this like maintain composure, fit in. How did you handle making the varsity baseball team after setting that goal for yourself?
It was pretty much this. It was kind of a little bit different, because like as a junior, I would be playing, like I'd play some games varsity and then play some games junior varsity. So there would be a game where I'd be like, okay, Paul, you're going to be at varsity, and I would be able to pitch an inning or two. So it wasn't like, I mean, there wasn't like a momentous like jubilation, just because I was just in the moment, like, okay, Paul, I got to get my uniform on and I got to go over here. So I just kind of focused in on the moment, because I really wanted to do well when I got to varsity. So I really didn't have this jubilant thing.
So
you didn't have
a moment where you walk up to a bulletin board and there's a list of names and your name is at the top?
No, because we didn't really have that. It was just like, okay, the coach would go to you and say, okay, you're going to be on varsity today or this or that. So it really wasn't that way. And it was good that way, because it didn't make me nervous. You know what I mean? It was just, okay, I just got to go. I was living in the moment. So that part of it helped. Now, looking back, like after I graduated high school, I was like, bam, that was awesome. I can't believe I did that. I mean, somebody with cerebral palsy, you know, making a varsity baseball team, that's ridiculous. I can't believe I was able to do that.
Right.
So I really started to think, you know, at that time, my baseball career is pretty much over. And I was thinking back to what the principal said to me way back before I even got to the school about not being college material, because through high school, all I did was just do enough to stay eligible to play baseball, because in the back of my head, I was thinking to myself, well, what's the point of trying any harder? I'm not college material. Let's not waste time here. Let's just stay eligible to play baseball and do other things. And that's what I did through high school. I just did enough to stay eligible to play baseball. And I thought, well, why is this person going to define me? Saying that I'm not college material, why not set another goal for myself and make me college material? Mm-hmm. So I enrolled into a junior college, because that was the only place that would accept me at the time. And I got myself a tutor. I got myself a math tutor. I went to the math lab. I did everything necessary to increase my GPA. And I was able to increase my GPA from a low 2.0, barely a 2.0, all the way to 3.5, where I was able to transfer to a four-year university where I was able to graduate. And I so wanted to go back to that principal and say, see, you're wrong. I was college material. But looking at it, going, you know what? I should thank her for giving me the motivation, because I don't know if I would hit the books as hard as I did if I didn't have that dialogue going back in my head saying, you're not college material, not college material, not college material, and wanting to prove that wrong, that I was college material. So in the end, I probably should thank her for giving me that motivation to really go after it as hard as I did.
I think there's a couple things here that I'd like to kind of dig into a little bit more and point out. Number one, the power of words. Like, whether it's our own narrative that we tell ourselves or whether it's a narrative that somebody else tells us, if we choose to believe them, words can truly make or break us personally, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. So number one, be kind to people. But then number two, I would love to dig into that a little bit more with you, because like you said, you feel like you could go back and thank her now. Well, that's because you didn't let those words stop you, but you could have let those words stop you. And so that could have been a very dangerous thing or dangerous moment in your life. And so what would you say to somebody else who was maybe given a life sentence per se of sorts, either by a medical professional or a education professional? You know, looking at your story, you were given the life sentence of a wheelchair. Your mother said, no, I'm going to push back against that. I'm not going to accept that. You're walking, you're doing all of these amazing things. You made varsity baseball. You were given the life sentence of never being college material. You were able to push through and become a college graduate. For people who are sitting there who are haunted by words that have been said to them, what kind of advice do you give to them?
I would tell them this: stop focusing on what you think you can't do and focusing on what you can do, because yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do. I would write it down on a piece of paper going, list out all the stuff that I'm good at. And let it flow. Don't worry about what you're saying. Just let it flow. And then go back to that list like the next day and look at it. And you'll be like, wow, there's so much I can do. And out of that list that you can do, find something that you really like. And that could be a passion that you can go after.
Right.
So I feel that that's what you need to do, is focus in on the great. Don't focus on the bad. Focus in on what is good. Because if you do that, you train your mind to look at more positive things. Because how many times do you buy a car and now you're driving that car down the road and you see your same car all over the place? Everywhere. Because your mind's looking for that. It's the same thing with a positive and negative mindset. So if you're looking out for positive things are going to come your way. Right. If you look for negative things are going to come your way. I mean, I got, you know, people that, you know, I have this example I always give, like if you're driving to work and you get a flat tire and the person says to themselves, this would happen to me. Bad things do happen to me. I would get a flat tire. And I would say to that person, yeah, bad things do happen to you because you're looking for those bad things. You're pointing them out in your mind. And that's why they're happening, because your mind's looking out for it.
Yeah, it's your reticular activating system in your brain. When you are thinking about buying a car, suddenly that car is everywhere. When you are thinking about having a baby, suddenly there are pregnant people everywhere. So I love that you pointed that out. Don't focus on what you can't do, focus on what you can do. I think we can so easily get caught up thinking about the things we can't do or the things that we don't have, that we miss the things that are right in front of us. And that's a sad place to be. So continuing on with your story, you graduated from college. Two other things that you mentioned in like your 3 to 5 most defining moments of life were becoming a top producing loan officer and becoming a mindset coach. Talk to me about those.
Okay. So I graduated college and I have no life experience at all. I have no idea what the heck I want to do with my life going forward. I had a family friend who was a CEO of a small bank, and he came to me and goes, why don't you try becoming a mortgage loan officer? I'm like, I got nothing else going on. Let's give it a go. Let's go. Let's try it. So he hires me, and I get hired on, and nobody wants to talk to me. Everybody is like shunning me. I'm sitting alone at lunch. I'm feeling back to where I was in junior high because nobody wants to talk to me.
Which is where you don't want to be.
Yeah, exactly. And I figured out quickly why that was the case. I knew the CEO of the company, and that's why I got the job. It wasn't because of my talents. It was because of who I knew. So they thought, well, this person doesn't know what they're doing. We're going to chew them up and spit them out because they have a silver spoon in their mouth. They don't belong here. So that's what was going on. They were like, you know, resentful of me. And so I thought to myself, well, what can I do here to overcome that? What attributes could I do? And I thought back to my baseball goal. What attributes could I transfer over to this goal? And I thought, well, the thing that I did was ignore the noise in baseball, worked extremely hard, and had a great attitude. So that's what I did. I ignored the noise. I worked extremely hard, and I had a great attitude. So if somebody needed something, I got it done in a timely manner. If I had a high workload, I never complained. I just got it done. And from afar, because they didn't want to talk with me, I was observing what top loan officers did on a daily basis, what made them successful. And I remember my first day where I thought I was ready to go out in the field and get loans for the first time. And I was going to walk out the door and start doing it. And the CEO of the company, my family friend, stops me. He goes, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm going to go out in the field now and I'm going to get loans. And he's like, no, you are not ready. You need more training. Let me get you back into training, this and that. And I go, no, I got this. I'm going to go. So he's like, okay. So I go out and I've fallen on my face. I don't know what I'm doing. He's right. I didn't. Clients were beating me up because they knew I didn't know what I was doing.
Right.
And for months, it was tough. And slowly but surely, though, I started to figure out value I could add for the clients. And once I started to learn the value I could add for these clients, things started to shift for me. I started to get loans in, and slowly but surely, more loans. And then 2 years later, I became a top producer. And the people that didn't want to talk to me when I first got there are now coming to me for questions on how I was able to increase my numbers at such a short pace. So it was a huge feat in my, short career in the loan industry that I was a top producer, and it was awesome. And for a long time, I really enjoyed the industry. And then the economy changes. 2008, 2009 hit, the economy just dove. And I would get a job and the company would go belly up, and I have to get another job, and then that company would go up, or I get laid off. And it was just swimming. And I started to really lose that luster of the industry, because I was like, this is crazy. And they put these new rules and regulations on us. So it was changing. But I'll never forget this. I remember one of my last places I was working at in the mortgage industry, they brought in this motivational speaker to pump up our the sales numbers to increase, morale. And the guy blew me away. The guy was tremendous. The guy was so awesome. So after the presentation, I went up to him to tell him how great of a job he did. And he was gracious. He allowed me to pick his brain a little bit. And he said he started as a life coach. I'm like, life coach, what the heck is that? And he explained that to me. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe that's what I want to do. Maybe I want to be a life coach. So on my off time, I was getting my certification to become a life coach. And I was starting to tell people, I was like, I want to become a life coach. And people in the mortgage industry are like, okay, life coach. Yeah, go ahead and get loans, bud. Whatever with this life coach nonsense.
Like, go do it. You'll be back.
Yeah, exactly. So I was, but things started to get serious. I got my website up and licensing and all this good stuff. And the legal team at the company I was working at saw that I had the side gig, and they're like, what is this? And I explained that to them. They're like, this might be a conflict of interest. So they're like, we're going to have to get back to you on this. So they did. And they came back with a 5-page report on what I could and couldn't say. I'm like, there's no way I'm going to make any traction in the coaching world if I follow this to the T. So I thought to myself, I'm going to have to make some hard decisions. So I thought to myself, if I really want to do this coaching thing, I'm going to have to make some changes. So for a year, I changed up my spending. I paid off all my debts. I did all the necessary things, set myself up, because I knew, you know, doing a new business, you don't make any money for a long time. So I thought, well, I better change things up. So I did all that stuff, and I quit. And the company was like, what in the heck are you doing? You just made President's Club. You're going on a cruise, this and that. I'm like, no, don't want to go on the cruise. I'm done. And they're like, you're a fool. You're a loan officer. This is what you do. You're really good at. Why would you leave? I'm like, right. I want to try this now. And they're like, dude, you're gonna, like you just said, you'll be back. This is pie in the sky nonsense. This is not going to work for you. And for a while, I thought they were right, because nobody wanted to trust me to hire me as a coach. They're like, I don't really trust this guy. And I thought back to, you kind of alluded to it in our early discussion about the cerebral palsy. You asked me, was I open about my cerebral palsy? And I told you I wasn't, because obviously I was just wanting to fit in. I didn't want to stand out. And just bringing that up would bring me to tears, because I didn't want to talk about having cerebral palsy, because I just wanted to fit in. And I thought to myself, how am I going to allow these people, you know, my potential clients, to be vulnerable with me if I'm not vulnerable with them? They need to know where I'm coming from as a human being. So I thought to myself, I'm really going to have to own up to my story about having cerebral palsy. And once I started doing that, once I started to open up about me having cerebral palsy and telling my story, things started shifting for me. People would come to me and go, you know what? I don't have cerebral palsy, but I have this. I can relate to you. I think you can help me. You know, they saw that I could have empathy for them. And then slowly but surely started getting clients and building up and you know, starting a podcast and just getting everything going. And it brings me here talking with you, Ashley.
I love it. And what do you have the podcast right now? I feel like I saw one of my other guests talking to you, Kwan Glover.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I interviewed him for the show too. So what is your podcast? Yeah.
It's called Actions and Limits. And I did have Kwan Glover. Great, great, great man. He went through his own trials and tribulations.
Yes, he did. So awesome. Trials and tribulations, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So if you guys are listening, make sure you go and check that out too.
Actions and Limits is the podcast. I was saying that Glover went through his own trials and tribulations.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So a couple of things I wanted to point out from your story is, number one, you don't let failure stop you. So like, there are many points in your story as you're sharing, just whether it was when you were 5 and you were playing soccer and you couldn't keep up with the other kids, or whether it was when you had to run laps in gym and didn't feel like you could keep up, or when you were a loan officer and you went and fell on your face, you didn't let failure stop you. And I think it's important to point that out, because there are so many times where it's a choice. We can choose to let that stop us, and we can say, well, I went out and I fell flat on my face as a loan officer, therefore I'm not cut out for this. And that can be the end of that part of our story, but you never let that failure stop you. You learned from those moments of what other people may call failure, and you used those to propel you forward. So what do you say to people who are at one of those moments of failure, feeling like they are completely and utterly lost? How do you find that gusto to keep going?
Well, first off, we're all human beings. We all have that feeling, right? I've had that feeling quite often in my life that, like, what am I doing? This is well over my head. I'm over my skis here. I don't know what the heck I want to do. So we have to embrace it, that we're human beings, and that comes into our head. Okay. That's number one. Yeah. You're not alone, right? We all feel that way. That gives me peace right there, that I'm not alone, that other people have those thoughts. Like, oh, well, they have those thoughts. I'm not crazy. You know, there's some times in my life where I had these thoughts about giving up or failing and this and that. And I thought, well, I'm the only one having these thoughts. But no, every single human being on this earth has these thoughts of, of, oh, you know what, maybe I'm not good enough. Maybe I'm not this, maybe not, not that. That right there just gives me solace, okay? So we need to give ourselves grace, you know, when we're having these moments. And it's okay to lick your wounds. I feel like, you know, there's so often that we're, you know, that we feel like we should just like, okay, just get over it and move forward. No, there's some times where you need to just take a break and say to yourself, you know, I need some time. I need some self-love. If anything that, any goal that you set for yourself, anything that you want to do in life, you've got to feel good about yourself first and foremost. If you do not feel good about yourself, it's going to be very, very hard for you to accomplish any goals. So first and foremost, you got to take care of yourself. It's that old analogy that when you go on a plane, you put your mask on first before you help anybody else. And that is so true in life. You got to make sure that you are right. Because if you are not right, you're not going to be productive. You're not going to be present for your friends and family. And most important of all, you're not going to feel good about yourself. But when you do feel good about yourself, even when things don't go your way, and you have a good sense of yourself, you'll find a way. Mm-hmm. You'll find a way. If you know, when you have joy in your heart, you'll find a way over these problems. I am way more productive when I'm happy than when I'm angry or sad. When I'm angry or sad, I'm not productive at all. Mm-hmm. And like when things go awry in my life, or whether it's personal or whether it's business, I say to myself, you know, like if I have to make a decision, am I in the right state of mind to make that decision? Because if I feel like I'm angry or sad, I pull back and I'm like, okay, you know what? Let's worry about me. Let's worry about these emotions that I'm feeling first and handle that. And then once I feel like I feel these emotions and I feel differently, then I'll make the decision. I think I make a more rational decision when I make a decision from happiness, as opposed to when I'm angry or sad, because I make an unrash decision when I'm those. I'm impulse. So I think it's important that we give ourselves grace when we're down, and I think that's very important. I feel like, especially on the man side, that we feel like, oh, you know what, put a Band-Aid on it and move forward. Sometimes that's not enough. Right. Sometimes we need to stop a second, and it's okay to, you know, suck your thumb for a little bit and get yourself right, because bottling things up is just going to lead to more disaster.
I'm glad that you pointed out the man side of things, because there is such a stigma in our society of like, man up, like just be tough, move forward, move on. But like, I don't know, I've never been a man, but you have emotions just like I do, and you go through experiences just like I do. And I think giving yourself grace and allowing yourself, you said it's okay to take a break. You said it's okay to lick your wounds. Like, those are natural parts of healing and coping and dealing with life and figuring out how we're going to move forward. And another thing that I love that you said is, you are not alone. That when you had some of those tough moments where you failed, for lack of a better word, you knew that you were not alone, that you weren't the only person that had gone through that. And I love that you pointed that out, because when we're in those moments, we feel alone. And part of the reason why we feel alone is because so few people are talking about these types of things. And that's part of what our nonprofit is trying to do, is we're trying to shatter the stigma by having these difficult conversations, by talking about how we feel during moments of failure, for lack of a better word, and by how we fuel ourselves to get up and to keep going. And so, thank you so much for being willing to come on the show to talk about these tough things. I love your energy. I know you're going to be, if not already, crazy, crazy, crazy successful, just because I can feel your energy through Zoom here. And yeah, I just appreciate you for being willing to have these tough conversations and talk about these tough things, because at Real Stories, Real People, we're trying to shatter stigma one story at a time. So super glad that you joined us. Where can people find you? And then I have two more questions before we're done.
Cool. So the easiest way to get in touch with me is through my website, acalltoaction.coach. And I developed this free guide on there on how you're able to rewrite your story and take control of your life. It's free. You just go on my website and pull it up, develop that. I show you how I was able to do it and how you're going to be able to do it and how to maximize your day all on that guide. So you have that. And then I developed a Facebook group, Rewrite Your Story, and it's been tremendous. And basically it's people all over the world and they share their stories with each other. And some of them inspiring, some of them they need inspiration.
Right.
It's just a community where we can just lift each other up. It's just been taking off so quickly, and we're gonna start doing monthly group sessions through the group, and it's just gonna inspire from there. So if any of your viewers, or Ashley, you would be great on if you wanted to join the group, because you have so much value and so much great energy yourself to go on there. I would love for you to go on the Rewrite Your Story group, because I think people like you would definitely be able to lift other people up with your knowledge about mental health and such. So those are the ways to get there.
I love that you said some of them have inspiring stories and some of them need inspiration, because that's also what we're trying to do, is encourage people to talk about these things, not when they're on the other side, but when they're in the midst of them. And that was a big part of my eye-opening and awakening, is being okay talking about the crap when I'm in the middle of the crap, when I'm in the thick of it, when I'm in the throes of all the crap that life throws our way, being willing to talk about that. So I love that you've created this group. I'll definitely check it out. I have two questions for you in closing. One, if you could go back in time and tell a younger version of yourself just one thing, what would you say?
Just be patient, Paul. Things are going to happen for you, and you're going to have a great life.
I love it. And lastly, what brings you joy today?
Well, there's a lot of things that bring me joy today, but one of the things that I love to do, and it's very simple, but I love to just take walks. Anywhere. It doesn't have to be somewhere scenic. It could be just around my neighborhood, and just not even having music on, just listening to, you know, the sounds of whatever is going on, the birds chirping, you know, sense of feel, touching flowers, smelling flowers. It just brings me like back to center. And when I'm having a bad day, that's what I do. I just take a walk and I just let my mind just wander. And that brings me a lot of joy.
I love that you said that, because it's finally getting nice here in South Dakota. And I was able to go outside yesterday and I came back inside to get ready for bed last night. And I just said, I needed that. I needed the warmer weather. I needed the fresh air. I needed to be outside, because it rejuvenated my soul and my spirit and my heart. So, Paul, you are a ton of fun, and I'm sure that I could talk to you all day long, but with that, we'll wrap this episode, and thank you so much for joining us. Hopefully this isn't our last conversation.
It definitely will not be our last conversation, Ashley. I appreciate the opportunity to come on your show, and thank you for your kindness and allowing me to tell my story. I appreciate it. And last thing I just want to say, because you talked about it a little bit, vulnerability is a strength, not a weakness. And if we can embrace that, sky's the limits.
Absolutely. I love it. Thank you.